Chapter 7. A Fishy Apartment. If someone had told Stiopa Likodiev the next morning, "Stiopa, get up this instant or you'll be shot," Stiopa would have said, in a languid, barely audible voice,
"Shoot me. Do whatever you want with me. But I'm not getting up."
Forget getting up. It seemed to him that he could not even open his eyes, for the moment he did, a lightning bolt would smash his head to pieces. Giant bells rang in his head. Brown blobs with fiery green rims floated between his eyeballs and closed lids, and topping it all was a feeling of nausea, seemingly connected to the sound of some really annoying gramophone. Stiopa tried to remember what had happened, but only one memory sprang to mind. Yesterday, he had apparently stood in an unknown location, holding a napkin, and trying to kiss some lady, whom he promised to visit the next day, exactly at noon. The lady protested, saying, "No, no, I won't be home," while Stiopa insisted firmly, "Well, I will be there anyway." The identity of the lady, and for that matter, the current time, date, and month, were a mystery to Stiopa. Worst of all, he could not tell where he was. Trying to at least establish the latter, he peeled open his stuck left eyelid. Something glowed dimly in the shadows. Stiopa finally recognised the object as the dresser mirror and realised that he was lying flat on his bed, the jeweller's wife's former bed, in the bedroom. Then his head was struck by a jolt of pain so powerful that he shut his eye and moaned. Let us explain. Stiopa Likodiev, director of the Variety Theatre, awakened that morning in his own apartment, which he happened to share with the deceased Berlioz, in a large, six-storey, U-shaped building on Sadovaya Street. It should be noted that this apartment, number 50, had long had a bad, or at least odd, reputation. A mere 2 years ago, it was owned by the jeweller de Fougeray's widow, Anna Frenchevna de Fougeray, a respectable and very practical 50-year-old lady, leased 3 of her 5 rooms to tenants, one apparently named Belomut, and another whose name has been lost. And then 2 years ago, inexplicable phenomena began to occur in the apartment. Its residents began disappearing without trace. One weekend, a policeman showed up at the apartment and called a tenant, the one whose name has been lost, to the hall, asking him to drop by the police station for a few minutes to sign something or other. The tenant ordered Anfise, Anna Frenchevna's long-time and devoted housekeeper, to tell anyone who called that he would be back in 10 minutes, and then left together with the respectful, white-gloved policeman. However, he did not return in the next 10 minutes, or, for that matter, ever. Most surprisingly, the policeman seemingly disappeared along with him. The God-fearing, or, to put it frankly, superstitious Anfise, told a very upset Anna Frenchevna straight out that witchcraft was to blame, and that she knew full well who had snatched the tenant and the policeman, only she did not wish to speak his name this close to night-time. Now, it is well known that witchcraft need but begin, and then nothing can stop it. The tenant disappeared around Monday. On Wednesday, Belomut also vanished from the face of the earth, though under different circumstances. In the morning, the company car arrived as usual to take him to work, and take him it did. But it neither brought anyone back, nor returned itself. Madame Belomut's horror and grief defied description. But alas, both sentiments were short-lived. On the same night, upon returning from the countryside, where she had urgently needed to go with Anfise for some reason, Anna Frenchevna did not find Mrs. Belomut in the apartment. What's more, the doors of both rooms occupied by the Belomut couple had been sealed. 2 days passed. On the third day, Anna Frenchevna, afflicted throughout all this by insomnia, again departed hastily for the countryside. Needless to say, she did not return. Left alone, Anfise cried her fill and went to bed some time after 1 in the morning. What happened to her then is unknown, though neighbours would later say that all through the night a mysterious tapping emanated from the fully lit number 50. In the morning, they discovered that Anfiche was gone as well. For a long time, various legends about the disappearances and the cursed apartment abounded in the building, such as, for example, that the dried-up, God-fearing Anfiche had carried on her dried-up chest a suede bag containing 25 large diamonds belonging to Anna Frantsevna, that in a wooden shed in the country, where Anna Frantsevna had so speedily gone, untold treasures came to be discovered, including the aforementioned diamonds and gold coins from the Tsar's mint, and so on like that. Well, what we don't know, we can't vouch for. Anyway, the apartment remained sealed and empty for only a week, whereupon it was occupied by the late Berlioz with his spouse and this Stiopa fellow, also with a spouse. Naturally, as soon as they happened upon the wicked apartment, all hell broke loose. For starters, both of their spouses disappeared in the space of 1 month, albeit this time not without a trace. Berlioz's spouse was apparently seen in Kharkov with some ballet master, while Stiopa's surfaced on Pozhedomka Street. It was rumoured that the Varieties director, using his countless connections, had managed to get her a separate apartment, on the condition that she never show her face on Sadovaya again. And so Stiopa moaned. He contemplated calling Grunia, the housekeeper, and demanding an aspirin, but managed to realise this made no sense. Grunia, of course, would have nothing of the sort. He tried calling Berlioz for help, and twice moaned,
"Misha, Misha,"
but, as you can imagine, received no reply. The apartment was perfectly silent. Wiggling his toes, Stiopa deduced that he was wearing socks. He passed his shaking hand over his hip to determine if he was wearing trousers, and failed to reach a conclusion. At last, realizing that he was abandoned and alone, with no one to help him, Stiopa decided to get up, no matter what superhuman feats it might require. Stiopa unstuck his fused eyelids and saw himself reflected in the mirror as a man wearing a dirty collared shirt and tie, as well as long johns and socks. His hair was sticking every which way, his eyes were swollen, and his bloated face was covered with black stubble. Such was the image he saw in the mirror, and next to the mirror he saw an unknown man, all dressed in black and sporting a black beret. Stiopa sat down on his bed, and his bloodshot eyes popped out at the stranger as far as they could go. The stranger was first to break the silence, pronouncing the following words in a low, heavy voice and with a foreign accent.
"Good day, my dearest Stefan Bogdanovich."
There was a pause, after which Stiopa said, with terrible effort,
"What do you want?"
And was amazed at how unrecognizable his voice had become. He said, "What?" in falsetto, "Do you?" in bass, and "want" did not emerge at all. The stranger smiled amicably and took out a large gold watch with a diamond triangle on the lid. He let it ring 11 times and said,
11. For exactly 1 hour I have been waiting for you to wake up, as you had scheduled our appointment for 10. So here I am."
Stiopa felt for his trousers on the chair next to the bed and whispered,
"Excuse me."
He put them on and asked hoarsely,
"Could you please tell me your name?"
It was very difficult to talk. Every word was a needle piercing his brain, causing infernal pain.
"What? You've forgotten my name too?" the stranger smiled.
"Forgive me,"
Stiopa rasped, experiencing new gifts from his hangover. He now felt as if the floor underneath him had collapsed and he was about to plummet headfirst into the devil's den in the netherworld.
"Dear Stefan Bogdanovich," the visitor began, smiling astutely, "all the aspirin in the world won't help you. Follow the wise old rule. Treat like with like. The only thing that can bring you back to life is 2 shots of vodka, with something hot and spicy to follow."
Stiopa was a cunning man. No matter how sick, he understood that since he had been caught with his pants down, he had better confess to everything.
"To tell you the truth,"
he began, barely moving his tongue,
"yesterday I had a little..."
"Not a word more," the visitor replied, and slid aside on his chair. His eyes bulging, Steopa saw a tray served on a small table. It contained sliced white bread, pressed caviar in a tiny bowl, pickled white mushrooms on a saucer, something in a little pot, and finally vodka, in a spacious decanter belonging to the jeweller's wife. Steopa was especially amazed by the fact that the decanter was foggy from the cold. This was to be expected, however, for it sat in a bowl packed full of ice. In other words, everything was served up neatly and skillfully. The stranger prevented Steopa's astonishment from reaching painful proportions by deftly pouring him half a shot of vodka.
"And you?"
squeaked Steopa.
"With pleasure."
Steopa raised the glass to his mouth with a quivering hand, while the stranger downed his own shot in a single gulp. Chewing on some caviar, Steopa squeezed out the words,
"What about you? A bite to eat?"
"Many thanks, but I never snack with my liquor,"
the stranger replied and poured a second shot. They opened the pot, revealing frankfurters in tomato sauce. The accursed green blobs dissolved before his eyes. Words began to come out more easily, and, most importantly, Steopa remembered a few things. More specifically, that he had been in Shodnia yesterday, at a cottage belonging to the sketchwriter Hustov, who had him delivered there in a taxi. He even recalled how they had hired the cab by the Metropole. With that actor? Or maybe he wasn't an actor. He had a portable gramophone. Yes, yes, yes. It was at the cottage. Even the dogs were howling at the sound of that gramophone. Only the lady Steopa had tried to kiss remained unexplained. Hell knew who she was. Possibly worked in radio, or maybe not. In this fashion, the previous day cleared up gradually. Right now, however, Steopa was far more interested in the present day, and particularly in the appearance of a stranger in his bedroom, with vodka and snacks, no less. That's what would be mighty nice to clear up.
"Well, then, I trust you've remembered my name by now?"
But Steopa could only grin shamefacedly and spread his hands.
"Really? I have a feeling that last night you helped yourself to some port after the vodka. With all due respect, that's never a good idea."
"I'd like to ask you to keep this between the two of us," Steopa said in an ingratiating voice.
Of course. But naturally, I cannot vouch for Hustov."
"You know Hustov?"
"I caught a glimpse of this individual in your office yesterday, but even a cursory glance at his face was enough to see that he was a swine, a squabbler, an opportunist, and a toady."
"Absolutely right," Steopa thought, astonished by such a precise, accurate, and succinct definition of Hustov. Piece by piece, the previous day was slowly coming together, and yet the Varieties director could not shake off his anxiety. The fact was that a gaping hole remained in the previous day's events. Say what you will, Steopa could not possibly have seen this beret-wearing stranger in his office.
"Voland, Professor of Black Magic,"
the visitor said weightily, noticing Steopa's hesitation, and sequentially narrated all that had taken place. "Yesterday afternoon he arrived in Moscow from abroad, headed immediately to Steopa, and pitched his act to the Variety. Steopa telephoned the Moscow Regional Performance Commission and settled the matter." Steopa paled and flapped his eyelids. "Signing a contract for 7 shows with Professor Voland," Steopa's mouth fell open, "and arranged to meet Voland today at 10 in the morning to discuss the details." And so, Voland came. Upon arriving, he was met by Grunia, the housekeeper, who explained that she had just walked in herself, as she was not a live-in maid, that Berlioz was not at home, and that if the visitor wished to see Stefan Bogdanovich, he should proceed to the bedroom himself. Stefan Bogdanovich was so soundly asleep that she would not undertake to rouse him. Seeing Stefan Bogdanovich's condition, the artist sent Grunia to the nearest grocery for some vodka and a little food, and then to the pharmacy for ice and...
"Let me settle with you for that,"
a mortified Stiopa whimpered, looking for his wallet. "Oh, nonsense," exclaimed the performer, and would not hear of it. The vodka and the snacks were thus explained, and still Stiopa remained a miserable sight. He remembered decidedly nothing of the contract, and, so help him, had not met any Volands yesterday. Hustov was there, but Voland was not.
"Could I take a look at the contract?"
Stiopa asked quietly.
"Certainly, certainly."
Stiopa looked at the paper and froze. It was all there. First of all, Stiopa's own debonair signature, a slanted inscription on the side, penned by the hand of the financial director, Rimsky, authorizing the remittance of 10,000 rubles to the artist, Voland, in advance of 35,000 due for 7 performances. Moreover, here was Voland's own signature, indicating that he had already received these 10,000.
"What on earth is this?"
Stiopa wondered miserably, his head spinning. The onset of sinister memory gaps. But of course, now that the contract had been produced, further expressions of surprise would have been simply rude. Stiopa excused himself for a moment and ran in his socks to the phone in the hall. On the way there, he yelled towards the kitchen,
"Grunia!"
There was no reply. Then he glanced at Berlioz's study, located next to the hall, and was, as they say, flabbergasted. An enormous wax seal was hanging on a string from the door handle.
"Hello,"
rang out in Stiopa's head.
"As if I haven't enough to deal with."
Stiopa's thoughts diverged and headed off on twin tracks, but unfortunately the tracks ran parallel to each other and led hell knows where, as they often do in a crisis. The jumble inside Stiopa's head defied description. There was the diabolical mess with the character in the black beret, the chilled vodka and the mind-boggling contract, and to add to that, will you please, a police seal on the door. Tell someone that Berlioz had gotten himself into some sort of trouble, and by God, no one would believe it. And yet there's the seal, right here. Yep. And then Stiopa's mind began crawling with disturbing little thoughts about an article that he, as his lousy luck would have it, recently forced upon Mikhail Alexandrovich for publication in the Journal. And strictly between us, a pretty stupid article too. Completely unnecessary and for precious little money. On the heels of the article came the recollection of a politically dubious dinner-time conversation, transpiring sometime around the evening of April the 24th, right here in the dining room, where Stiopa was having dinner with Mikhail Alexandrovich. That is, the conversation could not exactly have been called dubious in the full sense of the word. Stiopa would never have let himself be pulled into that sort of talk. But the topic was a little unnecessary. One could have done perfectly well without it, folks. Prior to the seal, the conversation could undoubtedly have been regarded as trivial. But now that the seal was here... Oh, Berlioz... Berlioz, simmered in Stiopa's head. I just can't get my head around it. But now was no time to grieve, so Stiopa dialed the number of Variety's financial director, Rimsky. Stiopa was in a tight spot. For one, the foreigner could take offence at the fact that Stiopa was running checks on him after seeing the contract, and, furthermore, the conversation with the financial director would be exceedingly difficult. After all, Stiopa could not just ask him, "Say, did I make a contract for 35,000 rubles with a professor of black magic yesterday?" That simply would not do.
"Yes,"
came Rimsky's brusque, unpleasant voice from the receiver.
"Hello, Grigory Danilovich,"
Stiopa began quietly.
"It's Likudiev. Here's the thing. I have here this, Voland, the artist. So, then, I wanted to ask about tonight."
"Yeah, the Black Magician," Rimsky replied from the receiver. "The posters are almost done."
Uh-huh,
Steopa said weakly.
Well, so long.
So you'll be here soon?
Rimsky asked.
Half an hour,
Steopa replied, hanging up, and clutched his burning head in his hands. Oh, what a nasty thing this was turning out to be.
What's with the memory, folks, huh?
However, delaying in the hall any longer would have been impolite. Steopa instantly formed a plan. Do everything possible to conceal his incredible forgetfulness and, as the first order of business, cunningly get the foreigner to divulge exactly what it was he intended to show tonight at Steopa's sworn responsibility, the variety. Steopa turned away from the phone towards the hall mirror, seldom dusted by the lazy Grunia, and distinctly saw the reflection of a very strange character. Tall as a post, and wearing a pince-nez. Oh, if only Ivan Nikolaevich were here, he'd recognise this character at once. The reflection appeared and vanished instantly. Alarmed, Steopa peered further into the hall and was again shaken, for a gargantuan black cat passed by in the mirror and also disappeared. Steopa's heart jolted and he staggered. What's going on? He thought. Am I going mad? Where are these reflections coming from? He glanced into the hall again and shouted fearfully.
Grunia, why is there a cat sauntering around in here? Where'd he come from? And who's that guy with him?
Don't worry, Stefan Bogdanovich,
came a voice, belonging not to Grunia, but to the guest in the bedroom.
The cat is mine. Don't be nervous. And as for Grunia, she's not here. I sent her to her hometown of Voronezh, as she's been complaining that you'll never give her time off.
The words were so unexpected and absurd that Steopa decided he'd heard wrong. He trotted to the bedroom in utter confusion and froze at the door. His hair began to crawl, and tiny drops of sweat appeared on his forehead. The guest no longer occupied the bedroom alone, but had company. A second chair contained the same odd fellow who had appeared previously in the hall. Now he could be clearly seen, a feathery moustache, one lens twinkling in the pince-nez, the other missing. But the bedroom contained something far worse. Assuming an inappropriate pose, a third visitor sprawled on the jeweller's wife's ottoman, namely, a black cat of terrifying proportions, holding a shot of vodka in one paw and a fork, which he had used to spear a pickled mushroom in the other. The bedroom's already dim light began to further recede in Steopa's eyes.
So that's what madness feels like, he thought, grasping the doorpost.
I see you are a little surprised, my dearest Stefan Bogdanovich, Voland inquired of Steopa, whose teeth were chattering. And yet there's nothing to be surprised about. This is my entourage.
Here the cat drank some vodka, and Steopa's hand took a slide down the doorpost.
And this entourage demands room, Voland continued. So you see, there is one tenant too many in this apartment. And it seems to me that extra someone is none other than you.
They's the one! They's the one!
Sang the tall, checkered man in a goat-like voice, referring to Steopa in the plural.
Besides, they've been quite the swine lately, drinking, using their position to get involved with women, doing a hell of nothing, not like they could do anything in the first place, seeing as how they can't make the tiniest sense of what they've been assigned, pulling wool over the boss's eyes.
Abusing the company car,
snitched the cat, chewing on his mushroom. And as Steopa slipped all the way down to the floor, clawing at the doorpost with weakening hands, the fourth and final manifestation took place in the apartment. A short but exceptionally broad-shouldered creature stepped straight out of the dresser mirror, a bowler on his head and a fang jutting out of his mouth, rendering his already hideous visage even more revolting. To top it all off, he had flaming red hair.
As for me, the new arrival contributed to the conversation, I don't even understand how he got to be a director.
The redhead's voice grew more and more nasal.
He's as much a director as I am a bishop.
You don't look like a bishop, Azazello, noted the cat, piling frankfurters onto his plate.
That's what I'm saying,
the redhead twanged, and turning to Volland, added respectfully.
Permit me, messire, to kick him the hell out of Moscow.
Scram! The cat barked suddenly, his fur bristling. And then the bedroom began to spin around Steopa. Hitting his head on the doorpost and losing consciousness, he thought,
I'm dying.
But he did not die. Opening his eyes slightly, he found himself sitting on something rocky. The air around him was full of noise. When he opened his eyes fully, he saw that the sounds came from the sea, and moreover, that the waves were breaking right at his feet, that in fact, he was sitting on the very edge of a pier, with a sparkling blue sea ahead and a beautiful mountain city behind. Unsure of what to do in such situations, Steopa rose on his shaking legs and headed to shore. A man was standing on the pier, smoking and spitting into the sea. He gave Steopa a bewildered look and stopped spitting. Then Steopa pulled the following stunt. He fell to his knees before the unknown smoker and said,
I beg you, tell me what city this is.
Really, no, said the heartless smoker.
I'm not drunk, Steopa said hoarsely. I'm ill. Something happened to me. I'm ill. Where am I? What city is this?
All right, it's Yalta. Steopa sighed quietly and collapsed on his side, knocking his head on the warm stones of the pier.